He is Robin Leach. He is Jada Morkin. This is Car Keys.
And I'll start off with the list of things that Jay and I will cover today. First is going to be a shocker in the pricing department of cars going forward, not because we have not been alerted or alerted our listeners that prices are probably going to go up in a number of factors from what they've already done for existing inventory of used and new vehicles, but because the delivery prices, which is an unnegotiable part of the sticker price on any vehicle, is already skyrocketing above what used to be just below the $1,000 per vehicle rate. It had already hit $1,495, which is like saying $1,500 a vehicle transporter costs from the factory to the dealer. But it has apparently hit $2,000 a vehicle for the current Jeep, brand new Jeep Cherokees that Stellantis is putting forth, and it's bound to spread through the industry. That plus chips are just part of the issue. However, the $2,000 a vehicle, you know, I always look at that when I'm looking at vehicles on the lot, the sticker, and for a long time, I mean, I don't have a lot of brand new vehicles, so I'm not going to have to suffer this indignity. Jay will comment on that, I'm sure. But it is, that's the first headline for this week's show. I want to move on to enjoyable rides, just to sort of start off this, continue to start off this show on a nice fun note, because I've been enjoying a wonderful ride over the last few days. Jay was with me in one stint of it, and it is really nice to drive cars that I have had for a long time, don't drive often, and go out and have it for a few days, which I did this weekend. It's a Jaguar that I've had since 2004, but it is a high-performance version, and it is a really wonderful car. I didn't really know how wonderful until really, actually, almost this last few days, because earlier in the summer, I had to replace the air suspension in the vehicle, which, unbeknownst to me, had failed completely. I thought it was just failing, but now it's fixed. And what a transformation in the ride of this vehicle it has made, which I didn't realize until I did install the new air suspension. And the car, as Jay will agree, is a real car, as Jay likes to put it. And it's just a joy on the road. It's light. It's an aluminum-bodied big car. It used to be a big car. Now it might be against the new Jaguars, J's, which are not being produced right now, may return as an electric vehicle. I'm not sure. But they're bigger. But it goes back to the days with just a nice lightweight chassis, high-performance engine, and it's very lithe on its feet, a.k.a. the Jaguar idea of the animal that it can spring around and zigzag when it's in a hunt for an animal, and this car can zigzag when you want to avoid something in the road and or get out around a car that you want to pass in a very quick fashion.
Can I ask you a question? It's 2004, you said. Do you think that the 2000, is the 2000 whatever equivalent as lithe?
I don't know. It may be, but I have never driven a 2020 or 19 or whenever the last XJRs were out there to compare, but I know they were bigger. They were quite a bit heavier because of technology and growth and that and the like.
Jay?
It might have been as lithe, but it never has looked as good as this generation of the car.
Robin's Jaguar is the last of that classic XJ.
Right, that look.
That started out in the 60s and 70s and 80s and 90s, and it just evolved very nicely, actually, all the way up to its last version, which is the one Robin owns, and they're beautiful cars. And he's right. And it's his own fault if he doesn't drive it more often, because it's right there for him to drive. So if you have a nice car, drive it.
And I noticed, to continue this thought before we go to Jay, is I noticed a lot of people out enjoying their, what I'll call enjoyable rides, meaning convertibles as a group over the last several days. Even though it's gotten colder, there were people out over this last weekend, whichever weekend you're hearing the show, and they had their tops down. And the temperatures were probably in the early morning stages of these days that I saw tops down as early as 10 or 11 o'clock in the morning, or in the 40s before they got up into the 50s and maybe 60s. But people, and some of these cars are older. They look terrific, and it's just nice. I think they're going to be around for a long time. We're watching ourselves leap into the electric era, and so far there's not an electric convertible out there, but the electric cars drive in a spirited way, in a different sense. But there's something about the classics or near classics that some of these older cars are going to be considered that are very enjoyable. They are they do not have all the electronics technology like lane keeping and lane assist and all this kind of stuff. But boys, for their day when they were great, they still are great in today's world.
So, Robin, here comes a trick question, and I've asked you this week. What is the difference between a convertible and a cabriolet? And you own one of each.
I refuse to answer. I'll let you take this over as the show.
Well,
I can't remember what you told me.
Robin's Mustang is a convertible, and Robin's Audi is a cabriolet. I'll leave it at that.
The Audi? Okay. Oh, that's right. Correct. Okay, we'll leave it at that.
All right, so for the rest of us, can Jay?
Terminology. I mean, I think
so,
it is how they market it too. They
don't call
a Mustang convertible a cabriolet in the Ford speak,
and
they don't call an Audi a convertible in Audi speak. They call it a cabriolet as a model. It's just sort of play on words with the same enjoyable results, presumably.
So I tried, Jill, you'll appreciate this. I tried to make a sales pitch yesterday to somebody who's looking at getting a smaller Volvo SUV and is considering either an XC60 or an XC40, is looking for a hybrid, and thinks the XC60 is too big for what they want or need to do with that particular car. And I said, hey, well, one of the most beautiful cars out there is the V60 wagon from Volvo. It's a beautiful car. There's as much space in it as in the next C40. You can get a hybrid version of it if you want, and you'd get the best of all worlds. And the person started Googling it, I guess, only to tell me that the Volvo was discontinuing the V60 here in the U.S., which I did not verify, but I have no reason to doubt. And it's a shame if that is the case. It's a shame to see another wagon disappear off.
Volvo is. I'll jump on this bit about the Volvo discontinuing certain of their vehicles. They are going headlong into the electric era, and they don't. There are not going to be very many fossil fuel, much less hybrid versions of Volvos, remaining available to Volvo lovers, of which there are many, in the too near distant future. They produce
here,
a very good vehicle, as Jay knows, and the V60 is one. I had one for a few days, and we talked about it on the show a few weeks ago, and Jay chimed in there, too. And it is a really nice vehicle, and Volvo should keep some of these vehicles around, in my view. But this is the way of the world, as everybody's leaping for electric models to take over, way ahead of maybe our heads being agreeing to take them over as owned cars, as opposed to what we are now currently enjoying driving.
So speaking of Volvo wagons, I met somebody this week who owns a car that I didn't even know existed back in its day. It's, I think, a late 80s, maybe 88, 89, maybe 90. No, I don't think it's a 1990. Volvo 740 wagon.
Right.
Turbo.
What a nice vehicle.
The 740 Turbo?
740 Turbo wagon with a stick shift.
Yeah, they were fabulous.
And this particular car You can see it around town in the Sharon area, and it's black, by the way, and it has over 350,000 miles.
Right.
And it's used as a daily driver.
Well,
and it's,
some of us remember Volvo's days of their cars being reputed to be able to go a million miles. And this is back in mostly last century when this was advertised or touted in news articles, because every time somebody had a Volvo that hit a million miles, it seemed to make it to the Volvo company, and so they could ballyhoo yet another one of their vehicles reaching a million miles of use, which is a magnanimous number for any vehicle to be driven, I think, these days. But Volvos used to have that reputation for durability far beyond what people deemed the durability of many other vehicles that were also around at that time would deliver to their owners. So that's the Volvo heritage. Volvo used to have something called an environmental radiator in their vehicles, and I'd love to know if they still existed because nobody's ever made mention of it, but it was supposed to help clean the air. And, Jay, you may or may not remember this, but there was some coating on the radiator that was supposed to clean the air as it flowed through the radiator grills in Volvos. And so not only were they deemed durable, but they were deemed to be environmentally desirable before their time as far as their opinion of their cars was. But that also was, I think, two or three decades ago when this might have been something that was heralded as a Volvo engineering feat.
Well, one way or the other, they were absolute wonderful work. As someone who had it right around that time, they were wonderful workhorses. And the stupidest thing I ever did was get rid of my 740 Turbo for a 960.
And right. That's, well,
you had a 740 Turbo. Was it a wagon?
Yes, of course.
Yeah, Jay, I remember that wagon that Jill had. And, the wagons, the Volvo wagons were always wonderful, and they still look good in their old vintage look because they're square, like a wagon should be, boxy, so that you can carry exactly what the word boxy infers or implies in terms of packaging. And you didn't have to worry about losing 6 inches between the bottom of the tailgate and the roof because of the slopage of many of these Avants, shall we say, Audi speak again, and or wagons that have been curved because of aerodynamic desirability for mileage claims. And I don't really know how much that really adds to the mileage, but that's what caused all these vehicles to lose their squareness and become sort of rounded artistic pieces.
So good to know that's out there. Really struck to know that the 860 is the XC60. But we should find out if it's actually being discontinued before we...
The V60, yeah, we'll look into that.
But, great, well, I think it is.
But
anyways,
it
Jay, take
too
over,
small.
Please.
I don't know. You had a list of subjects. If you want to go back to pricing, a couple of things. I think the delivery charge is bound to go up. I think if the delivery charge really is what it is, and we're talking about car prices again, the cost of trucking, the cost of fuel, everything has gone up significantly over the last few months. So there's no real big surprise here. What is more surprising is that with all the lack of inventory on dealer lots, don't feel like you need to feel sorry for them, because dealers are actually making record profits this year, or this last quarter anyway. So it'll be interesting to see if the business model changes a little bit over the next few years. We've seen dealership lots with a lot fewer cars than we have been used to. And I'm just wondering if we're not just going to see a change in the model, finally, where dealers do stock less cars and where you do order cars. And
Jay, that's a good point, because my next topic was going to be discussing Ford's plan to change their method of trying to sell vehicles through their dealership to build-to-order strategy like we used to do way back when I bought my first car, when there weren't a lot of models or lines of models of cars lining the dealer lots where you could go in and basically, if you could find the right color and more or less the right list of options, and Jill loves this one because she ordered a car and it came through supposedly what she wanted, and it turned out it didn't come through with the options she demanded, but the dealer had gone out and sought a vehicle that was already available instead of trying to get it built to, in this case, Jill's specific requested options on it.
The guy was a cretin.
Ford is trying to do this, and they've sort of figured this out during the chip crisis because they no longer can just sort of run their assembly lines because they don't have the chips to fill the cars on the assembly line, numerical assembly line capability. So they have to use the chips for vehicles that actually customers have probably plunked down a deposit on. And the question is that going to spread through the industry, which Jay was just getting to? It'd be a nice thing. I think it'd sort of be fun. But it's not the way that assembly lines, car manufacturers like to run their assembly lines, because the more cars per hour they build, the cheaper per hour it costs them to build the cars.
Yes, but having 60-90 days worth of inventory spread around the countryside on dealer lots or any other lots, there is a cost associated with that, and somebody's paying for it. I mean, there's
that's correct. Somebody's paying for it.
It's called interest on inventory.
All right, I want to just ask something. There was a headline, and I'm sure it was to get attention, but it was still. You can fill in the word. So it was New York Times. It was about Rivian last week, and it was
Their stock sale.
$86 billion capitalization, 156 vehicles sold.
Well, yes, but I think you can look at what's the other one? Lucid Air, and Lucid has sold 20 vehicles, and there's a great picture of their. Lot where they show that they've produced another batch of 20 cars. So yes, these companies are slow at getting off the ground at producing vehicles. I personally don't doubt for a second that Rivian is going to be able to ramp up production. First of all, there is money. They got a ton of money from IPO. They also have Amazon heavily invested. They've known for years now that they have to produce these 100,000 vans. I've seen pictures that the factories do exist. Yes, it's going to take a little time, and I think Elon Musk put it very well when he said, hey, these companies are great, but the real test is going to be can they produce the vehicles and turn a profit?
And that's right. And in order to do that, they have to produce a satisfying product. And Lucid seems to be jumping out of the box with a product that is being lauded across the news waves, shall I say. And it's made Motor Trend's Car of the Year. And it isn't even on the lot for the consumer to sit there and vote on it.
Well, you can see it in New York, and I have a friend who saw it and actually was kind of disappointed in the build quality. So go figure what until we get our hands on one, that would be nice, right?
Yes.
Which are going to have to wait and see and talk to the first person in our area who ends up buying one and getting one.
I agree.
Going back to having something that's fun to drive. All right, 5 minutes, 5 minutes.
Conversely,
5 minutes, Mr. Whiteside.
Alpha is doing something that I think is stupid. Jay, I'd like you to jump in on your comment. Right alongside Lucid Air is more proof that the EV charge will be here soon. Headline is a... headline, Alpha CEO hints at small fighter to take on the Mini. Why does anybody want to take on the Mini Cooper-sized vehicle with a new vehicle is beyond me in this era of where Mini cars have proven to be sales failures for just about every manufacturer that has produced something that was supposed to be an economy car alternative to gas-guzzling cars 20 years ago. And as we have said, or I have said, and Jay would probably agree, sometimes these small cars get worse mileage than midsize and full size vehicles do because of the power to weight ratio engines consume gas.
Alpha's got great heritage. I grew up with Alphas all around me. I used to ride in a Giulia going to school when I was a little kid. Loved the sound of it. But it's been a business failure as far as I can tell since I was a kid. Since the 1970s, it's been a failing company. So once in a while they come out with a great product, and then they just go in limbo, and you know, they've been kept alive, I think, by Fiat and then Fiat Chrysler and now Stellantis. It'll be interesting to see what the future of the Stellantis group is. But to talk a little bit about safety before we end the show, I've been driving a lot back and forth to the city over the last few weeks, and I just want to tell people, it's just the amount of traffic out there is just crazy. Every day, every time of day, there is really heavy traffic, and you just have to keep your eyes peeled. It moves, and sometimes, traffic has that effect that actually it moves faster than when you can drive faster in traffic than when there's no traffic, because cops are never around to nail you when the whole flow of traffic is moving at 85 miles an hour. But very heavy traffic, you wonder where people are going, and the price of gas and doesn't seem to be affecting people at all.
So. And to that end, I agree with Jay. I do a lot of driving between New Canaan and our area, mostly against the grain of the commuting traffic flow, which is nice for me. But I observe what's going on the other side, and the amount of traffic on 684, even on weekends, is astounding. When you think that the traffic flow would be less because it's a weekend. But I noted the last time I watched this, the commuting side of 684 going, the traffic was moving the fastest in the right-hand lane, which is supposed to be the travel lane. And we've talked about this on and off, safety-wise and that like. And if you follow the direction of the signage, if you're going to go more or less the speed limit or travel speeds, you go stay in the right lane, and if you want to pass, you get to go in the left lane because it should be clearer. It's precisely the opposite. It's astounding how many people just sit in the left and the middle lanes of a three-lane road and or the left lane of a two-lane road going the same direction and go slower than the traffic can go in the right-hand lane, which is not supposed. You're not supposed to pass on the right.
Well, here's the thing, and I'm just going to say this. Passing on the right is legal in some states and not in others. And so, first of all, from a legal standpoint, you have to be careful about what states you are passing in the right lane. Having said that, passing in the right lane is just never a good idea. Does that mean I never do it? No, but you really want to pass in the left lane. You want to pass on the left side of cars. And yes, you would like them to stay in the right lane. And I think a dozen states have come out with the following, law, and it is keep right except to pass. And it really is that simple.
But it should be that way, but the drivers in the left lane do not know that. And they go along, and they've got their eye on a cell phone, and they're going along it as a speed-limited or speed-posted sign of 65, and they're going at that speed or even slower, and you are cruising faster in the right lane. It's not a question of passing. It's just the right lane is moving more quickly, and therefore the string of cars in the right lane is just doing exactly what Jay says we should not do. But it's doing it in a string. It's not just an individual car passing the left two lanes, as it might be, or the left lane, as it might be, to get by a slow individual car in that particular lane.
Well, also one of the benefits on the left is that the driver can see you. I'll just throw that out there.
Well, that's true. But the other thing about three lanes with this problem is that the tractor trailers, I've noticed, have been sort of generally staying in the middle lane, as do many people. And that's even more dangerous because you've got a tractor trailer that might decide to move over to the right lane, and that's when this topic that Jay's recommending and we don't do is really to be a cautionary situation, because you cannot be distracted driving in the right lane, even less so than anywhere else you might be on the road.
To be continued, because we are out of time. He is Robin Leach. He is Jay DeMarkin. This is Car Keys. Baby, you can drive my